So I think I have about 50 minutes left, I think. That's fine. Okay, thank you for coming. This is a very simple presentation. I think it's a very simple concept. So if you're an economist, you think of everything in terms of prices and income, and if you raise one, what happens to the outcome? In this case, the health outcome. And in the recent years, since mid-1980s, there has been what they call the obesity epidemic. And then one of the prime candidates for that was the excessive consumption of sugar-sweetened beverages. By the way, it was funded by the NIDDK and NIH. So the question is that you have a lot of issues about prices, taxes, and income, and obesity and SNAP. And so the question: how do they all come about? So the basic facts are that there are 42 million. Low-income users who, on average, drink more soda than the average population. And the literature says that the SNAP use, SNAP stands for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is used to be called a food stamp. We still call it food stamp. And there has been evidence indicating the food stamp is associated with soda use and obesity, which is a little bit of a paradox because soda is somewhat considered as inferior goods, meaning that the SNAP is basically an income transfer program, so you get a food voucher to purchase food. So you are increasing some people's income, but they are purchasing goods that associated with lower income purchases. So why do this group of people purchase soda if you are giving them more income? So that was one of the paradox in one strain of literature. And then on the other side, especially in the public health sectors, there has been a concern that whether or not the SNAP program should be used to purchase soda, because soda is basically a sugar sweetened beverage and what we call the empty calories. So there has been quite a bit of debate about whether it should be steered towards more healthy, nutritious beverages such as orange juice and milk. So, and then there's another strain in literature whether or not taxes should be used to reduce soda purchases. So the answer is that if you go through the tie together all the strain of literature, What we find that is that the SNAP is actually associated with the soda tax exemption, meaning that when you get a SNAP benefits, not only do you get a voucher to purchase foods, with it you are granted certain amount of food tax exemption. So once you get the SNAP exemptions, you get more income, but at the same time, your effective price for soda actually decreases. So you get more income, but at the same time, the price goes down. So you have a previously unnoticed incentive to purchase more soda once you get a SNAP SNAP benefits. So this is a very simple schematic. This is how people used to think of SNAP, the impact of SNAP program on the housing the house outcome, meaning that it works through the basically it seems to be modeled as income effect, meaning that you increase the household income, so they purchase more soda. But the problem is that there's no firm evidence that income itself was responsible for the association. So what we are proposing instead is it's actually the contextual factors, meaning that there are certain amount of soda taxes that's actually in the environment, but they don't affect everybody at the same time, because people, you know, the like a 12% of population who receive SNAP benefits are exempted from taxes. So they did not pay taxes, so they're not affected, while the rest of the populations are affected by the soda taxes. So if you're to try to estimate the effectiveness of taxes at reducing soda tax, soda consumption, that estimation will be impacted because you have this previously uncontrolled soda tax exemption. So to do this, this is an empirical investigation. So ideally, you would have some kind of randomized trial control. So you give some people some high income, you give this person higher income plus soda tax exemption, another person just a soda tax exemption. But we don't have that kind of information. So secondary to that, we have the quasi-natural experiment where we have a variation in soda taxes across the country and over the years. So the Mike Walter, the Jamie and the Lisa and the Powell at the UIC, they we collected a 3-year interval about the soda taxes at the county level, population weighted county taxes. That's what the Jamie always tell me, and then combined it with the soda tax purchase record at household level, and this kind of information usually obtained from the Nielsen. So people call it Nielsen scan, and it used to be called home scan. So what they do is that somehow households who are participating in the program, they would purchase the soda, bring it home. They would actually have a scanner, scan it, so they have a record of how much soda has been purchased in the household, what quantity, and what sizes. So, and then we did that for every summer for over 3-year period. So, in one hand, we have the longitudinal record of soda taxes across different regions across the country. And then you have a household sample who are overlapped in that during that time, during that environment. So you would run some type of regression analysis. In this case, we used a two-part model, primarily because it has been used by the other previous studies. How do you estimate this kind of impact? So, there are many ways to do it, but we just went with a simple way. I call it the segmented or stratified sample, meaning that we just cut the sample in a such a way that some household. So you compare the household where they have a household in a low tax soda tax environment, and another household in a high tax environment, and then you will look at the household who has the SNAP soda tax exemption, and you look at the household who doesn't. So you just compare them next to each other, and then you would combine everything together and then see what happens. So this is the case where we compare the outcome by the SNAP tax exemption status. So on the bottom, it's basically saying that if you increase the soda tax rates, then you will reduce the household consumption by 0.03. There are different ways to interpret what that number means, but it's basically saying that it decreases the purchases by a certain amount. But important part is that if you look at the first row, which only has the, you know, the tax exempt households. It's basically saying that the soda tax has no impact on the soda purchases. Why is that? Well, there's the exempt from taxes, so that makes sense. And then if you look at the second rule, you get the impact of 0.331, which is significant and a higher or a more negative number, meaning that if you only isolate the household who are subjected to taxes, then you get a bigger estimated impact of soda taxes on the soda consumption, which makes sense, right? If you tax more, what do? Do you purchase more or do you purchase less? You purchase less, right? So this is what this table is basically saying. And then in the next table, right, instead of looking at the tax exemption status, we would look at the tax level, right? So on the second column, this is where the tax exemption status. So if you're tax exempt, so what would you do? You would purchase less or more than the average household. If you don't have to pay taxes, what would usually happen is that you would purchase even more. So if you look at the sample who are exempt, and the estimated coefficient would be positive. So in this case, this is saying that if you receive the tax exemption, you would purchase 8.9% more soda. Now in the next column over, if you look at only the household who are located in the area with zero taxes, meaning that you live in a region that has no soda tax at all, then whether or not you receive soda tax exemption doesn't matter. You would purchase the exact same amount of soda as anybody else in the region. And the reason is that there's no soda taxes. So in that case, soda tax exemption would make absolutely no difference to your purchase behavior. And then if you look at the one column over, so you get a 0.132, meaning that if you live in a region that has a soda tax rate of 5% or higher, then then having a soda tax exemption status is associated with 13.2% higher soda purchases at the household level. And then all the way to the right hand side, positive people, then that's 12.2%. So the basic message from this table this table is that yes, the soda tax exemption under SNAP is associated with the higher soda purchases, but only if you have a soda taxes in the region. And then, if you think about it, we did not really emphasize this point in the conclusion, but as a public health professionals, we are saying that we should raise the soda taxes. We should raise soda taxes, right? So it would bring down the overall average consumption, but one of the problematic outcomes is that what happens to the people who are receiving tax exemption? They would be left behind. So if you think of, in terms of like a soda consumption disparity, meaning that the lower income household consuming higher soda, they don't benefit from the protection of soda taxes. So the question is, as a public health professional, what is the most desirable outcome? So the SNAP tax exemption is federally mandated, meaning that it comes from the federal level. At the same time, in the recent years, you know, we have a lot of the soda tax proposals, but most of those came from the local and state level. So local and state level want to raise the tax on soda. But at the same time, sort of federal government is already imposed nutrition policy, saying that, if you have low income, if you qualify the SNAP program, you don't pay food or beverage taxes, including soda taxes. So there's, with respect to soda and with respect to lower household, there's two public health policy that's operating in opposite direction. So that's one of the main message from this study. So basically, this is saying that the reduced soda taxes will reduce the soda purchase by 3.3% and zero impact if you don't pay taxes. And then conclusion, on all the way on the bottom, tax is it's a great policy instrument. It works. It's very efficient. It's administratively efficient, easy. But at the same time, nobody has ever paid much attention to tax exemption that's available to 12 to 15% of population who happens to be low income, vulnerable population. So, there's some type of need for coherent, national health and nutrition policy. And I think we do a good job of that at the national level, but sometimes, you have so many different organizations, putting everything, not necessarily, not always in the same direction. So that's one of the conclusions from this study.
Thank you very much, Dr. Wada. We have about a minute if people have immediate questions. Let me start back here.
Do you think there's any other ramifications
for
other things, like
doing
tax and having
the
kind of reverse outcome?
No, there's a lot of ramifications. I mean, if you're actually involved in this type of advocacy, a lot of people say, well, the SNAP taxes, SNAP program should not cover soda at all. And one of the criticisms that's from the equity standpoint, meaning that it's somehow unfair to prevent lower income people from consuming soda. But it would be equity only if you think of it as income program, but it's not. The SNAP program is not just income program. It's also a subsidy, price subsidy program, meaning that it gives you tax exemption. So the one of the solutions that we're offering here is that you don't have to ban soda from SNAP. We just need to take away the soda tax exemption from soda that's purchase with a SNAP. And then once you kind of steer the policy discussion that way, then equity is no longer a problem, because it's more equitable if everyone pays the same amount of taxes, right? So right now we are giving special favor, but you don't have to pay the taxes. No, I'm just take away the tax exemption. So if you take away the tax exemption, it's no longer discussion about equity. It's discussion about whether or not we should be subsidizing.
Okay, thank you very much again.